Welcome everyone to Then Now Whatever, the wrestling podcast with episode 55, another edition of the Tape Trader Diaries. It's the first Raw of 2002. I'm your host, the brains behind the Hardy Boys, Duncan Joyce. I'm joined once again by the cerebral assassin, it's Mr. Kyle Cambry.
Hello, it's good to be back. Number 55, wow, we are really churning these out now.
Yeah, we're getting back into a rhythm here. This is going to be a very, very busy year in terms of like the calendar year that we're covering. Most of our shows are from 2002 now, and I actually went and fetched my edition of the WWE Yearbook 2003, which covers this year, so I've got a handy reference here.
Nice.
Oh good lord, 2002 is, I think I've said it before, possibly the most transformative year in the WWF/E.
Yeah, 100%. A lot of things happen and I'm looking forward to getting stuck in.
For sure. What's happening with you?
Well, we have just finished for Easter. We've got a nice 2-week break and it means that I can spend a full 2 weeks with Thomas rather than being at work and not being able to see him until the evening for an hour and then he goes to sleep. It's going to be nice, nice little break. Nothing planned, just recharge of batteries is sort of the plan. How are you?
Oh, that's lovely. I'm really good. I've also got some holiday coming up. We've got the whole second week of Easter off. Kathy's got some friends coming over from America. We're going to go all around Manchester and Hebden Bridge entertaining them. And I'm also going to an 80s and 90s wrestling quiz at Grub in the Red Bank.
Oh, I bet that'll be fun.
Kathy's banking on me winning it by myself. She's just there to have booze and stuff.
That's a lot of pressure.
Just before I broke up from work as well, I added Monday morning after Easter to my holiday too, so I could stay up for WrestleMania.
You don't understand how excited I was when I found out that Easter week was during WrestleMania, so that I didn't have to book any holidays. It's very exciting.
Oh, that's perfect timing. It's just a shame the daylight savings didn't cross over enough.
No.
Yeah, let's get into things. So as we mentioned at the start, this is the January 7th, 2002 edition of WWF Raw. It's from Madison Square Garden in New York City, New York. Got a Nielsen rating of 4.9. And 13,978 fans were in attendance. Just goes to show what a big difference having the big Raw stage makes.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
It's usually like 19,000 or so when they just have the little fire door exit stage. Yet this is the first real original Raw of the year. I think the New Year's show was just highlights or something. Now, supposedly Kyle had recorded this, but I never saw a sight or sound of it, but I'm going to take his word for it, because there was no way on our timeline as we are that we were going to let this show slide.
No chance at all. In fact, I remember just being really excited that he was coming back. We've mentioned previously that in those days, internet and the scoop wasn't as regular and you sort of didn't know what was happening, when it was happening and stuff like that. You only sort of got it in the magazines or 2 weeks prior, like, you know, promo stuff. Sort of the excitement was already brewing for a very long time, because the only time that you got, you know, these promos were during wrestling things rather than, you know, seeing it on X or seeing it on Facebook or, you know, wherever.
Yeah, sure. I only heard this from you. I wasn't online until March, so I got all of my wrestling news secondhand. And I think that's where I asked you to take the next week's Raw, which will be our next episode as well. Oh, God. You remember how last time there was the one person in front of the camera for the fireworks?
Yep.
We got it again. This is frizzy-haired lady going absolutely wild.
You would think that they would get these sort of the camera stuff correct, especially like the firework stuff that everyone wants to see.
I feel like it's got to be a deliberate vibe they're going for here.
Yeah.
Like, to try and make it look attractive for the people who want to go to the shows. I'm fucking dying of laughter already because JR is promising a tag team match for the ages as The Rock and Stone Cold Steve Austin take on the mighty force of Booker T and the Boss Man.
You could be surprised.
Don't get me wrong, they're good lads, but tag team match for the ages.
Well, we'll see.
He's also plugging the highly anticipated return of Triple H when Vince McMahon comes out carrying a gift-wrapped blue present. Vince versus Ric Flair is official for the Royal Rumble, and Vince has a nasty black eye on him.
Do you know, when he was walking down the ramp, there was a sign that back in the day when that sign was put up, they would have not known how relevant it is in today's day and age. As he was coming down the ramp, the camera flicked over to a fan sign that just said, "Vince is a freak." And as That's I was watching true. It, I was like, wow. Well, here we are.
I thought it was going to be Vince belongs in prison or something then, which is
yeah.
Where we ought to go there.
Yeah.
Vince claims what he's got now is more important than Triple H's return. Proper heel work for you there, Kyle.
Nob.
Now, I know some of you may feel that Ric Flair shouldn't be in the ring with a man of my distinction and calibre. That gets him the what treatment, so he pleads, "Please don't start with that what crap tonight." Anyway, he's going to dispel that myth with a highlights package of Flair's career in the 80s and 90s. And hey, it's not just a bit. It's a genuine sizzle reel of Flair wrestling back in his prime, wearing his robes, strutting, and winning world championships.
I don't know. I don't remember that ever happening. Maybe I tuned out during that bit, but I was like, this is really weird that we've got some sort of sizzle reel for Flair.
Well, there's a clear overdub on the music as well. It's this generic pop guitar music, so kind of wondering what was there originally in its place.
Yeah.
Like, maybe this was a full-blown Desire video or something, and they had to re-edit it.
Oh, possibly, yeah.
I was going to ask you about this. Like, were you surprised, just like I was, that this was sincere?
Yeah.
And I thought it was going to be, like, Vince making a crock out of Flair or something. But I guess they had to kind of try and educate people on Flair as a wrestler, really.
I suppose, again, it's a lot different now, isn't it? That if a certain wrestler was to go from WWE to AEW or vice versa, your average fan is a little more knowledgeable of everything that's going on. So you're going to be aware of that. Whereas back in the day, it was very much you were a WCW or you were a WWF guy. And sometimes, other than the big guys, let's say, like Jericho or whatever, you wouldn't necessarily have that, you know, for the younger fans anyway.
That's very true. And it's very different to today as well, where people's archives are a lot more readily available.
Yeah.
Like back then, if you wanted to study up on Ric Flair, you'd probably be dependent on some like out of print Warner Home Video releases of the WCW shows.
Yeah.
And WWF only just acquired the archive and starting to put it to use here. It's not like fucking today when the bloody TNA social media accounts are like, "Oh, did you notice this thing happened in wrestling? Oh, well, this also happened 8 years ago in our company. Do you want to see it again, even though you've got no emotional connection to what happened?" I'm sorry, everybody loves it, but I just think it's thirsty as shit. Come on.
Yeah.
Vince calls Flair's career one of the greatest of all time, and then shows clips of him starting his new career as the co-owner of the WWF the night after Survivor Series. You could go back to episode 49 of our show for that. 2 weeks ago on SmackDown, Flair challenged him to a match at the Rumble. They show a slow-mo replay of Flair punching Vince in the mouth. And then on last week's SmackDown, Flair hit Vince again in an unprovoked attack from behind, and that's given Vince 3 stitches. Vince doesn't have to beat the man to be the man, because he's already the man, and he's going to prove it. He unboxes the present, and it's a blonde wig and one of Nature's robes. Vince is midway through putting this wig on, and he asks, "Hold your applause." So JR quips, "That won't be hard." He marks the Nature Boy's strut, which draws out the man himself. JR calls Vince's impression a defamation of character, which is a bit extreme, I think.
Yeah.
Flair snatches the mic from Vince. He found a soft spot in his heart with that tribute video. "But then you go and do something stupid! You'll never get in my face or make fun of me ever again!" Flair snatches Vince bald and threatens to kick Vince's ass from one side of Manhattan to the other if he doesn't take the robe off. It looks like Vince would oblige, but then he attacked with a lead pipe hidden in the robe. Vince tramples on the robe like a little kid jumping on his bed. Vince showed Flair's bloody face to the rest of the crowd and then dumps him on the outside of the ring, into the stairs and the ring post. And then we see where Shane got his punching ability from as he tries to clobber Flair on the outside but doesn't have much success. He calls Flair a piece of crap before taking his leave, and they replay that after we come back from the commercial break.
That pipe hit is so strange.
Are you wondering, like, it's a concussive blow, but somehow it's drawing blood?
Yeah, literally everything about it. So bizarre.
What did you think of this segment?
I mean, you've got your typical Vince heel, "I'm going to take the piss by dressing up as him, you know, blah, blah, blah." Throughout all this, on my rewatch, I'm very much in Flair's corner with all this. Because I remember back when I was watching it originally, I was like, "Yeah, who's this guy? He's Ric Flair guy." Whereas now, I'm watching it back with, like, obviously more knowledge, I'm like, "God, Vince is a prick." I enjoy it for what it is. You know, it's like you say, when he's jumping on the robes and, like, it's just childish shit. But you got to enjoy it for the time that it was in.
Yeah, I'm not really feeling this feud much. I don't remember where my turning point was with, okay, I can accept Flair as a babyface. I mean, it did come, but I still wasn't that interested in seeing him wrestle. Maybe that video package that they did would have turned me around a little bit, but to me, he's still the old man that wrestles in his slacks from WCW and won Fluke World titles and stuff. He had a lot of his reputation damaged by the way that they treated him in the dying days of the company.
Yeah, I think mine was very much just grounded in the fact that Vince used to just piss me off. So anyone that was going against Vince, I was just very much like, just knock him out, please.
Mm. He is a very good antagonist.
Yeah.
It's quite a strange sort of dichotomy they've got here. Vince should physically outmatch Ric Flair, but the idea of this match is that Flair noticed Vince's contract stated that he's a wrestler as well as a co-owner, and so, okay, you're going to try and be a wrestler with me then, buddy. And Vince is having to do the underhanded thing to get control of Ric Flair. We'll see how it plays out later. It'll go back and forth in terms of how much it gets highlighted. We're on to our first match of the evening as Rob Van Dam takes on Test. There's so many RVD signs in the crowd.
Yeah.
RVD also has a big old shiner on his face. And Test has seemingly dyed his hair a little more blonde than usual as well.
Hmm.
There's a great somersault backdrop escape, followed by a spinning heel kick by RVD for a 2 count. But a second kick is turned into a single leg powerbomb. Crowd loves RVD, massive RVD chance. He escapes a suplex, hits a rider kick, escapes the pump handle, and hits the windmill kick. Test then shoved referee Tim White into the ropes to prevent the frog splash, and rolled RVD up with the feet on the ropes, but he only got 2. That leads to a shoving match with the ref that transitioned straight into RVD getting a roll up for 2. The big boot missed, and RVD hit a diving front kick. causing Tess to go out and get a chair and intimidate the ref again, which obviously backfired as Van Damme hit the Van Damminator and the 5-star frog splash to get the win after 3 minutes and 45 seconds. Another somewhat anonymous performance from Test, although that's mostly down to the majority of his match being the ref intimidation gimmick because, you know, you can't fire me, I got immunity.
Surely he shoved the ref numerous times. Isn't that a disqualification?
You'd hope so, yeah.
Yeah.
Like, you can't fire him, but surely you could fine him or something.
Yeah. And, like, you just lose the match on the spot. Done. There's no need for RVD to need to try and find a pin because he's just disqualified himself. He's touched the referee. My note for this match, I've just put, he's just test, ?
Oh.
I feel sorry for the lad. I'm not a test fan.
Imagine him doing the Ryan Gosling Ken song.
Oh, man. I feel sorry for RVD. He's better than these type of matches. It happened. It's one of those, I think.
I still thought it was pretty solid because RVD continues to charm with what we see out of him. He's got his offensive playbook and his defensive escapology. That was the real standout for me for the time they were given.
Yeah.
I'm just test. Anything else would be in jest.
Yeah.
Coach is backstage awaiting the arrival of Triple H, but Kurt Angle bumps into him and suggests Coach should interview someone that actually arrived on time. Kurt teases his own big announcement and rejects Coach's pity questions. When Triple H arrives, start spreading the news, because tonight is my night. It's true. Good luck with that, Kurt. Women's champion Trish Stratus is in WWF New York as their host for the evening, but Terry Runnels cuts her off to announce she's the new host of WWF Excess. You familiar with that show at all, Kyle?
I'm trying to rack my head. I can't think of.
No.
Sounds like one of those just pure recap shows.
Yeah.
Was it something to do with, you know, those studio ones that they had?
Yes.
I think it was like that, where they had people in and it was like a green screen, weird backgroundy thing.
That's what I was thinking, yeah. I feel like at some point, Superstars just became a recap show and then they're like, oh, this is a bit beneath that brand, let's just put it to bed, and this must have been what they came up with after it.
Yeah.
Terry calls Trish pathetic. She doesn't measure up to her. Terry makes a challenge and Trish reels off the laundry list of demeaning women's matches that she's defended her title in as she speculates what Terry's challenge could be. Either way, Trish delivers 100% satisfaction guaranteed to all her challenges. The challenge is a wet t-shirt contest, and Trish accepts as Lawler wets himself. Yippee.
Yep.
Our second match of the evening sees Billy and Chuck take on Scotty Too Hotty and Albert. We're getting much closer to final form Billy and Chuck here as they're in their matching headbands. And Billy suggests that him and Chuck should be in the wet t-shirt contest because of their fabulous physiques. But they get interrupted by the babyfaces at the suggestion that Chuck pulls out his hose.
Oh, those good old cliches.
Apparently these teams already confronted each other last night on Heat, as we see Albert power out of the headlock, stand his ground from an Irish whip to clothesline Billy down, and then he avalanches both of the heels into the corner, causing Billy to land right on Chuck's hose.
Lol.
Scotty then ducked a clothesline to netbreaker Chuck for a two count. He fires back after Billy's attempted cheap shot, but still winds up isolated until he DDTs Chuck to get the hot tag to the Hungry Hungry Hip Hop Hippo. It's a power slam on Billy, and then he sees Chuck's elbow drop coming and makes it land on Billy instead. Scotty's first bulldog attempt is countered, only for Billy and Chuck's double team to backfire, which allows Albert to pump kick Chuck and Scotty to finally get the Bulldog for the W-O-R-M. Chuck pulled Scotty off the cover, super kicked Albert, and then lured Scotty into Billy's Famasser for the free count. Again, after 3 minutes 45 seconds.
Do you know at this point, rewatching the show, I was actually thinking, and you might laugh at me at this, but this was a genuine thought of mine. Were they making these matches so stupid and irrelevant to hype up Triple H's return even more and get the pop that they did? Because that's, after this match, that's where I was in my headspace.
I don't know what my headspace was, but okay, compared to the last episode of Raw that we got, it's a really similar format. There's lots of really quick matches tonight. But I was just feeling for in-ring quality more for this show, if I'm honest.
I think, for me, it's, you know, because it's random pairings, like tag teams. You know, we've discussed this before, haven't we? Like, as a tag team, you should be a tag team. So, okay, Billy and Chuck, yes, they are a tag team and they do become a fully accomplished tag team. Scotty and Albert, not necessarily.
Well, yeah, Albert had a lot less of his dancing tonight that really kind of charmed us in, at Vengeance. But I still find him and Scotty an entertaining team. I think this was a simple and likeable tag match. It zipped along at a nice pace and both teams got some highlights out of it.
Yeah, I suppose if anything, they were teasing where Billy and Chuck are headed.
Yeah, they're becoming a bit more coherent and they got more of a gimmick.
Yeah, yeah.
Being a bit more elaborate about like their handsomeness and things like that.
Yeah.
Charmel is backstage with the Undisputed Champion Chris Jericho, who wants to be addressed as the living legend and enjoyed seeing Vince beat up Flair because Flair made the match that wound up making Rock the number one contender for his title at the Rumble. I got a bit of history from the 2003 yearbook for this, Kyle.
Okay.
Jericho's opponent for the January 20th pay-per-view was determined at the first SmackDown main event of the new year. A number one contenders match between former five-time WCW World Champion Booker T and former six-time WWE, three-time WCW, and always the People's Champion, The Rock. A loyal underling to WWE co-owner Vince McMahon of late, Booker prepped for his match by joining Boss Man in a beatdown of Stone Cold Steve Austin. Notwithstanding backstage interviewer Jonathan Coach Coachman's awful rendition of Barry Manilow's Copacabana, it was The Rock who rolled into Washington DC's MCI Center, overcoming interference from McMahon and Bossman, to deliver a rock bottom that nearly drove Booker through the canvas. Notwithstanding, who other than Vince McMahon uses that word? Jesus.
Yeah.
No matter, this'll just mean that Jericho gets to beat The Rock for the fifth time. Y2J complains about Flair making him fight Rikishi in a non-title match tonight, presumably to try and get him stink-faced. But his beautiful face has never been desecrated, and it won't be tonight either. So, you've got your Undisputed Champion doing the same gimmick as your lower mid-card vanity heel tag team.
Yeah.
Okay. Only so many ideas going round tonight, it seems.
Yeah.
Michael Cole is excited to be in a garden, but then his face drops when he sees he's interviewing Stone Cold Steve Austin. What? No, go ahead. I was just going to ask. What? He won't answer any questions tonight because he saw Triple H backstage. You ready to chime in with me here, Kyle?
Okay.
But he won't wish him good luck.
What?
How you doing?
What?
Good day.
What?
He's excited to confront him face to face.
What?
Tonight, Austin officially enters the Rumble.
What?
He'll throw one man over the top.
What?
Then another.
What?
Then another.
What?
And then I just sat and realised, oh my God, he's going to go all the way to 29 with this. And he fucking did. What the hell? But tonight he teams with The Rock.
What?
The great one.
What?
The most electrifying man in sports entertainment.
What?
And Bossman and Booker won't run roughshod over him. That's the bottom line because Stone Cold said so. This is the manic energy that made me come around on this gimmick.
Yeah, he's at the point now where he's just on a different level mentally and physically, and it's hilarious.
We'll get the peak of this next week. But yes, he's very much out of Dunk's bad books now.
Yeah.
Oh, Lord. Lawler's got a super soaker and informs JR he'll be the MC for the wet t-shirt contest tonight. You know how Mattel made WWE become PG and get rid of blood to get the action figure deal with him again? Do you think they're thrilled about the super soakers being used in this context tonight?
Oh, yeah.
Our third match of the evening is for the Intercontinental Championship. The champion Edge is defending against Lance Storm. Hey, he's got a job now.
Well, you say that. Give it 30 seconds.
Tonight's Raw is brought to you by Black Hawk Down, Stacker 2, the world's strongest fat burner, and Final Fantasy X. This is a rematch from SummerSlam last year, and Storm is out of the blocks early with a corner clothesline. But then he does a springboard nothing that gets drop-kicked away. Then I just heard Lawler say he could squirt on Terry and Trish forever, so now you have to as well.
Okay.
There's a back body drop by Edge. The execution gets blocked, but so is Storm's victory roll, only for him to roll through into the Calgary Crab. Edge got to the rope and stepped over Storm's next single leg attempt to hit the execution and retain his championship after 1 minute and 10 seconds. Holy shit.
Like I said, at this point, you see where my headspace is going.
Sure, yeah.
And what, Lance Storm's just a jobber now?
It's the weird, warped kind of alternative universe of TV championship matches as opposed to pay-per-view ones where I guess it doesn't really matter how quickly you lose. It's more like the result is what people are supposed to be left with and you're not supposed to be concerned with the substance of things.
Yeah.
I mean, at the very least, talk about maximising your TV time. They crammed in everything they could in that one and they didn't put a foot wrong.
No, that's a fair point. For me, it's just when you look at like match length and most good matches has to have at least, you know, hit a certain length, if you will. That's my only thing with it. You know, I think Edge is great and I think, you know, Lance Storm's great. I don't know. A match so short, especially, you know, with a belt on the line.
Especially this championship, like this is the, in history, has been associated as the workhorse championship.
Yeah.
I don't know. I just think about like that one time R-Truth had a match with McGillicutty or Bo Dallas or whoever from the Outcasts on that Fastlane show we watched. And it was twice as long as this and you could literally sum it up in two sentences.
That's true.
I at least appreciate there was some effort to try and pass this off as their usual in-ring standard, even though they did not have the time to meet that in actual fact. During the replay, William Regal attacked Edge on the ramp. Apparently, he had to get his broken nose fixed. He took an execution on a chair, and he needed 3 surgeries from it.
Jeez.
He wallops Edge with the power of the punch with the loaded brass knucks to close out the segment. Then they plug the Austin and Rock versus Booker and Bossman tag match being next. But when we return from break, we actually get Kurt Angle chilling out with Christian, slagging off Triple H. Kurt single-handedly saved the WWF at Survivor Series and brings happiness and joy to children all over the world every single day. Where was Triple H during the invasion anyway? According to Christian, he was probably home spinning U2 records or something. Well, give it a year and a half and he could use that quip on Kurt, but with Coldplay instead.
Yeah, that's true.
We're zooming through this show as we reach the halfway point already. So, Kyle, we're at Madison Square Garden. What's some of your favourite wrestling memories of Madison Square Garden?
Ooh, that's put me right on the spot. I know this wasn't necessarily at Madison Square Garden, but I always go to this one whenever anyone mentions Madison Square Garden. Do you remember Triple H and Undertaker having a wrestling match in that train station?
Oh, right, yeah.
I always thought that that was because it was a Madison Square Garden match. But I was never too sure.
That might have been in the little theatre attached to Madison Square Garden.
Yeah. But I always remember that, and I always thought, imagine you've got a train into New York, and boom, you get off the train, and then you see those two going at it.
Yeah.
Triple threat, Triple H, Shawn Michaels, and Benoit. I thought that was very good. I've not actually seen the whole match, but they always do the Jimmy Snuka thing, don't they, the steel cage? Because that was Madison Square Garden.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you'll have to correct me if I'm wrong, I'm pretty sure was Triple H and Cactus Jack at Madison.
That's exactly it, yeah.
Yeah, so they would be the ones that I'd go to.
Yeah, when you were talking about the people fighting on the subway, Royal Rumble 2000, where they had the taxi in the aisleway, and the aisle looked like a literal back alley.
Yeah.
That's what I go to all the time. It's just crazy.
Mick Foley and Triple H, they just gelled so well together. They always put on great matches.
That one in particular is an all-timer. Like, they're a classic pairing in wrestling, and I don't think they surpassed that Royal Rumble street fight. That's brilliant.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, I mean, overall, like we were talking about earlier, the visual minimalism of them coming through the doorway like that instead, it's really stood out to me. Like, this is more of a classical venue.
Yeah, I think that's it, isn't it? When you're in such a venue like that, you don't actually need to go full scale.
Mm.
Because the venue itself is, that's the aura, isn't it?
Yeah, no doubt about it. I went on the tour when I went to New York 7 years ago. Really wish I could have gone to some kind of game or some kind of actual event there. There was an NBA game the day we took the tour, but that just meant that we couldn't go backstage into the locker rooms, which was a bit of a shame.
Yeah.
You mentioned WrestleMania 20's main event there.
Yeah.
Even though they still had like a proper official stage and stuff, I love that they put the screens on the doorway that used to be the special Madison Square Garden entrance, just to kind of acknowledge it and go, oh yeah, that's where they'd be coming out if it was a different show.
Yeah, it's a fantastic place, and you always tend to, whenever they go there, there's always something special that happens.
Yeah, I love Jeff Hardy just flying off the doorways.
Yeah.
And then Kofi kind of took that up when he was feuding with Orton. That was cool.
Yeah, and then, like, the more recent, again, Madison Square Garden, they use that for Punk's first WWE match back. So again, you know, like, using the venue, going against Dominic Mysterio. Alright, it was a house show, but you're always going to sell out Madison Square Garden anyway, but the fact that Punk's fighting for the first time in, what, 10 years or whatever it was, you know, again, they always want to try and make sure something's special.
I wish it could have become like an on-screen feud and stuff as well, but that's just like the perfect thing, because it'll piss off all the people that don't watch WWE and assume that feuding with Dominic is this death sentence and stuff. And that it's also like probably the easiest way to ease yourself back into the ring, because he's so over and he's a really great heel. You can figure out how to play to the crowd and get your spots in and stuff and have a good day at the office.
Yeah, I mean, I was listening to Rhea Ripley on the new episode of Impulsive, and, you know, she was saying that Dominic literally is a workhorse and just works his ass off and will do absolutely everything. Flies everywhere, wants to be at every show, just wants to be involved. And I suppose if you're that kind of person, you're always destined to at least be near the top. Do you know what I mean?
Mm.
You know, if you've got that sort of commitment.
Yeah, seems like a good lad. And the other thing I think about when I think of Madison Square Garden is 2008 Royal Rumble. John Cena returned and broke the internet.
Oh, yeah. The fucking bionic man. Unbelievable.
And then the crowd reactions as well. Like, people are so surprised. They're like, what the fuck? John Cena is here. And they're fucking going crazy. Like, yes, this rules. And then he starts wrestling and they're like, wait a minute. Aren't we supposed to not like him? Boo! It's John Cena! Boo! Our fourth match of the evening sees Booker T and the Boss Man, no longer the Big Boss Man, I wonder if he was sensitive about that or something, taking on The Rock and Stone Cold Steve Austin. It's the tag team match for the ages! Austin has stitches in his head thanks to an attack from Boss Man and Booker, because apparently everybody's getting busted up tonight. The heels wouldn't get back in the ring when the faces arrive, so the faces take the fight to the outside, and then Austin Fez presses Boss Man in the ring to officially kick us off. Austin then stun guns Booker, a nice throwback. Booker tried to atomic drop out of Austin's corner 10 punch, but got flipped off and clotheslined. Rock keeps brawling with one lad on the outside, and then feeding them back into Austin when Austin's done beating the other guy up and shit cans him outside. It's a bit Chuckle Brothers.
Yeah.
To me, to you. It's funny seeing Austin try to do the knife edge chops on the Boss Man, because they make absolutely no sound against his riot gear. It borderline hurt yourself trying them, surely.
Yeah.
Ah, Jesus Christ, kid, I hit myself on one of your buttons. Rock finally officially tags in the match and gets a leaping clothesline. He drives Booker face first into the mat, but gets sent to the outside. And with Austin arguing with the ref, Boss Man attacks with the nightstick. JR then informs us, Triple H is still scheduled to be here tonight. Didn't you hear Austin? He's arrived already. Either way, he bemoans the damn nightstick in tribute. Rock ducked a leg lariat by Booker T, hits a belly to belly in the spinebuster, but the Boss Man trips him up during the people's elbow, allowing Booker to hit the bookend. Austin comes in to illegally spinebuster Booker and flip off Earl Hebner. Then Boss Man lays the Rock across the top rope and repeatedly headbutts Rock in the ribs. Rock dodges a scissor kick and hits a DDT, leading to tags on both sides. Boss Man nearly dying, taking a backdrop. Jesus Christ.
I feel like this was throughout this match, but also in previous matches. Like, Boss Man has issues whenever he's been lifted in the air. He doesn't seem to know what to do.
I'd be in this position. I can't even do a forward roll. It's that uncomfortable going over my head. It's a spinebuster by Austin, who then ducks a Harlem sidekick, allowing Rock to spit punch Booker over the top. And then Austin cuts off the attempted nightstick attack with the Stone Cold Stunner for the free count, leading to Austin and Rock toasting to celebrate their victory in 8 minutes and 22 seconds. What do you make to this one, Kyle?
Well, it definitely wasn't a tag team match for the ages, so we can put that to bed.
That's true.
It was okay. I feel like it was better than the first tag match. There was times, though, when, I don't know, I felt like Austin maybe wasn't really in this match. He sort of was elsewhere. There was a bit towards the end where Boss Man breaks up the people's elbow and then Booker T does the bookend. And Austin comes in to break stuff up, but he was way too early because nothing had been started for him to break up. And I was like, whoa. So that's my only issue with the match. It didn't seem as fluid as it could have been.
I rated this a bit higher than the previous tag match too. I thought it was perfectly solid. It's another match where there's this big gap in ring presence, and it really came across. You know, the heels, they mostly did generic stuff. then they were getting fed into the baby faces, but Rock and Austin kind of carried this one just enough. Jericho admires his face in the mirror as JR speculates if he'll wind up in the stink face. Well, we'll find out next, because our fifth match sees Rikishi take on Undisputed Champion Chris Jericho in a non-title match. JR then informs us there's a Hardcore Rules tag title match still to come tonight. That's a bit out of nowhere. Jericho's tights are patterned after the pipes in everyone's favourite Windows 98 screensaver.
Yeah.
We get a bump in the corner early by Rikishi, but Jericho scooched out of the ring, so Rikishi attacks him at the announce desk. But Jericho slips out of the snake eyes to send Rikishi's shoulder into the post, and he follows it up by sending him into the exposed barricade, and then getting a second rope dropkick back inside for a two count. Keish missed a leg drop and gets bulldogged, but avoided the lion salt and hits an Alabama Slam style spine buster. Then the Samoan drop finally allows him to hit the leg drop. For some reason, referee Nick Patrick tried to prevent the bonsai drop, which saw him get shoved down, but does allow Jericho enough time to dodge the bonsai drop, grab a title belt, and even though Rikishi ducked the attempted shot and superkicked Jericho into Patrick into the corner, when Rikishi went for the seemingly double-stacked stink face, Jericho got out of there and only Patrick ate the stink face. So Jericho attacks with the title belt and Patrick recovers enough to count the three without even looking at Rikishi's shoulders to get Jericho the win after 3 minutes and 27 seconds.
What a strange match. Surely, if you wanted to keep Jericho strong, did we need a crooked referee, a belt shot, and him to cheat to win? Weird. And any other ref is not stopping Rikishi doing a stink face at the beginning or a banzai drop.
Yeah.
Like, what was going on?
I think this is the weakest match of the night so far, and somehow it involves the Undisputed Champion.
Weird.
That doesn't bode well. I mean, I get there's a size difference, but this match should have been beneath Jericho, especially if the main plot outside of will he get stink faced is that Vince has booked his crooked ref of this match to help him out.
Yeah.
Not good. And the people already seem pretty nonplussed about Rikishi.
Rikishi, unfortunately, he takes a nosedive after the whole drive-by thing, doesn't he? We've discussed this before. Unfortunately, it sort of destroyed his career.
Basically, yeah. They try to pigeonhole him back into his original gimmick, but the genie's out of the bottle.
Yeah.
The WWE 2003 yearbook put this match rather amusingly. Narrowly avoiding the cheeky finisher due to one-sided officiating from referee Nick Patrick, Y2J resorted to an undisputed cheap shot using one of the heavyweight belts on the Fat Man with a PH for a larger-than-life victory.
Oh, wow.
I love this book. So, back in the day at school, if you got prizes at the year-end awards, you got book tokens to this local bookshop to Bolton called Sweetens.
Yeah.
This was what I used up all my tokens on in Sweetens in year 8.
Do you remember that portable bookshop that used to drive round near our house?
We had a bookmobile?
Yeah, it was weird. All I can describe it as is like the American school buses, but cut in half and white. And it would like stop at random places near school and that sort of stuff. And when you went inside, it was a library. Well, not a library, but like a bookshop. You could just buy books.
Wow.
I bought like loads of books from there, like on different occasions. And then it just vanished, just disappeared. And I was like, did this even exist? And I asked my dad about it. My dad was like, yeah, I remember. I remember taking you on and you buying a book. It's like, what? Yeah.
Oh, I'd love that.
Yeah. It's very bizarre.
I wasn't allowed to go out to the ice cream man. Maybe if it was the bookmobile, I would have been able to convince my mum and dad to let me go. But
yeah.
Aw. We see Tori Wilson, Tajiri and the Big Show backstage. And the lads are in some pretty fetching hats. So Tajiri's got a somewhat more sophisticated version of the Mancunian bucket hat with a trim. And Big Show's got a golfer lad flat cap on. Show says competition is going to go through the roof with Triple H back. And Tori and Tajiri are both excited to finally meet him. Kurt Angle overhears all this and calls them teenagers at a Ricky Martin concert, pointing out that Triple H made everyone's life miserable before his injury. This just confuses Tajiri and he thinks Ricky Martin's here, so he sings Living La Vida Loca to close the segment. I thought Ricky Martin would be a bit past it by now.
Yeah, I mean, I think we're past his most popular era, aren't we?
Yeah. Oh, speaking of past the most popular era, we see Spike Dudley warming up for his title match when Devon and Bubba confront him. Taz then comes in to even the odds, and Bubba asks him, hey Taz, shouldn't you be getting ready for Sunday Night Heat or choking out your mother or something?
Wow.
Taz doesn't get how the Dudleys have chips on their shoulders after all their tag title reigns, so Devon challenges them to knock them off. But according to Bubba, they can't. They're too short. Bubba claims Taz forgot where he came from, so Taz promises they're all going back where they came from next. This leads to a nice little callback to Taz's old catchphrase, where Bubba threatens, beat us if you can. And Taz tells him, survive if we let you. Very random feud, this.
Yeah, really, really odd. Like, out of nowhere, bizarre.
So the yearbook's got a little bit on the origins here I wanted to share with you. Desire comes in all shapes and sizes in the WWE. In the case of tag team champions Devon and Bubba Ray Dudley, their all extreme demeanour and taste for wood placed the half-brothers atop of the WWE tag team table, usually by putting their opponents through one. But the unlikely tandem of the Dudley's half-brother Spike and Sunday Night Heat co-host Taz both know more for their toughness and heart than their size and strength, would shock the champions with a non-title win at the end of 2001, then followed up with a near upset for the belts during January 3rd SmackDown. Instead, the underdogs had to settle for some underwear, pulling down the skirt of the Dudley's personal diva, Stacy Keibler, before Bubba powerbombed Spike from the second rope for the 1-2-3. Personal diva!
I mean, at the end of the day, is Spike and Taz a long-term championship team?
No, I doubt that. This is going to zip along. It's the sixth match of the evening. For the tag team championships, it's a hardcore match. Dudley boys, the champions, with Stacy Keibler defending against Taz and Spike Dudley. The faces met them on the ramps, but didn't get much of an advantage. Bubba cracked Taz right in the face with a bin lid, but the fans were more interested in chanting for tables.
Yeah.
Spike tried to sunset flip Bubba, but got a fire extinguisher blown in his face. For a bit of heel heat, or an attempt at heel heat, they do the Devon get the table routine, but Bubba only whispers the get the table bit. Spike headbutts Bubba in the balls, and Dudley dogs Devon, but Bubba move the table out of the way. Taz then put Devon in the Taz mission, but sees Bubba's about to counter another Dudley dog, so he pulls the table away from Spike and clotheslines Bubba, and then has a rather nice time taking in Stacy's attempted distraction. Bubba tries to jump Taz from behind, and then he gets mesmerised by Stacy's ass and T-bone suplexed onto the table, which didn't break. So Taz put it back up, and Spike Dudley dogs Bubba through the table for the freak out and the titles in their first reign after 3 minutes and 45 seconds. Like you say, Kyle, I don't really see them as permanent championship material.
Yeah. I mean, the match was fast-paced. But that doesn't mean that it was great. The live crowd, you could tell that they were invested in it, but that's, I think, due to weapons rather than anything else, because that's what any fan likes to see. But other than that, I found this match very bizarre.
It's a very strange title change. It sounded weird to me as a kid, and it still feels weird going back and watching this now.
Yeah.
Two-thirds of this was weapon shots and Dudley Dog attempts, so it's pretty limited. It kind of feels like they're just trying any old shit.
Yeah. Do you know what this reminds me of?
Go on.
Do you remember the old... Well, I suppose they brought it back in the new wrestling games, but in the old wrestling games, they had GM mode, where
yes,
you'd spend like your money to make sure that your show was good and blah, 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 blah. To me, this Raw feels like all the money was spent on Triple H's return and they're just using what else they can to just make a show up.
Oh, yeah, Jesus. Like, I remember getting caught with, like, random halves of tag teams drafted over to me.
Yeah.
I've still got one more match to fill out on this card and I've only got JTG and Charlie Haas and a Highlander. Shit, what do I do?
Yeah.
Trish is shown heading to the ring for her wet t-shirt contest. And then we get an advert for the Royal Rumble. If you build it, they will come. For some reason, a cowboy builds a Royal Rumble ring in the Wild West, and it gets filled with sumo wrestlers and little people cowboys. Some lad watching summarises it. That ain't right. Okay. What were they thinking with this kind of stuff?
I don't know. It genuinely baffles me.
Oh, good grief, right. I was watching this show while Kathy was making dinner and she literally finished it just in time for the wet t-shirt contest. It's the ultimate sod's law of watching wrestling while your partner enters the room. So I took a break at this point. I'm like, all right, there's no way I'm coming back to this. But before we get there, Undertaker cuts a promo on Triple H's return, warning him that the fans don't respect him, they just use him, and just want his blood and pain. Enjoy your big night back, but The Undertaker runs this yard, and he'll win the Rumble by being the only dog left in the ring. Nice that he gets his say, but like you say, Kyle, it's so Triple H focused.
I mean, I'm not complaining at all, but for the basis of what the show is, I find that quite ridiculous.
Mm. Right, then, here we go.
You could have at least had some more enthusiasm than that. All right, here we go.
We just got to get this out of the way. So, while I was kicking off a wet t-shirt contest, saying he's dreamed about Terry and Trish being topless, but this is the next best thing. Oh no, his love gun went off prematurely when Terry joined him in the ring. Apparently there's actual rules to this thing. The women will get soaked down and then the audience votes for the winner. Oh, that's some real complicated rules. Tony Chimmel describing the rules to the strap match, this ain't. Oh joy, Lola wanks off the super soaker because Trish wanted her soaking in the middle of the ring rather than against the ropes like Terry. And then from behind, my god, we've got an actual feud, thank fuck. Jazz comes in and attacks Trish.
Who would have thought Jazz would be here to save the day?
They wanted Neville to get the Mighty Mouse gimmick, but actually they gave it to Jazz 15 years beforehand. Lawler pulls her off, so Jazz drop kicks him in the leg, but he kind of no-sold it and warded her off. Does this mean we're actually going to get women wrestling, Kyle?
Potentially.
God, that'd be a treat. It's almost as if you want Trish to be your women's champion, you should put her in with better wrestlers and... Oh my God, have they figured that out at last? Anyway, moving swiftly on. We get the graphic for Triple H's return next. And then the Royal Rumble replay with Final Fantasy X on PS2. It's Drew Carey entering the match last year. Of all the things to highlight.
And it was such an important entry within the Royal Rumble. And he did a lot of things. So, you know, I'm not surprised.
It's enough to have a Hall of Fame career, apparently. But don't get me wrong, I thoroughly enjoy him trying to bribe Kane and Kane turning his head and looking at him like he has no comprehension of the concept of money.
Yeah.
But surely there's more you can do to get people excited for the Rumble. They recap Jazzy's attack and then, here we go, Kyle. It's the main event.
That's it. Absolutely incredible. Oh, he's back.
Out comes Triple H to one of the loudest, most colossal, heartfelt pops you'll hear from a crowd.
Unbelievable. Every time I watch this, that pop is insane. It is unbelievable.
When he does the water spit, it's absolutely off the charts.
Yeah. And I think this is one of those where automatically as a fan, you know that he was a dick heel. Do you know what I mean? And then he's gone away and the fans just want him back. And so by default, you become this face. And what a way for the audience to just be like, we are happy you're back.
It just shows how good a job they did of getting over how career threatening this is.
Yeah.
And so, like, the fans, even though they hated Triple H in terms of the pantomime, if it came to hating Triple H and not having Triple H, the choice is obvious. You want Triple H.
Absolutely.
In wrestling still.
Yeah. Yeah. And this look is... It's... Yes. I was going to say that this look is like synonymous with like his return, isn't it?
Oh, sure, yeah.
When you look at anything going forwards from 2002 for the next year, he's like, this is him, denim jeans, leather jacket. Like, the denim leather jacket. Yeah, unbelievable.
It looks so heavy. I think you should leave sketch where he's like in disguise in the mall and he's like, there's too much shit on me.
Yeah. No, well, it's mental because we'll get to it. But when things come off, you're then like, holy shit, he's jacked.
Oh, fucking hell, yeah. This is what CM Punk seemed to have been going for as well. And it didn't work out in his favour, sadly.
No.
That's also the debut of the Iron Cross Triple H logo. We've been talking about how, oh, previously he was a bad guy and stuff, and Lawler keeps trying to poke JR about this. Listing off all his heel antics, and JR just sidesteps it, calling him controversial. And then King outright tells him, JR, this is the man who broke your arm! And there's a pause, and JR just with the like, oh, okay, how do I put this here?
Yeah.
He is as deadly as they come. Like, how can I spin this as a positive? They have to loop Triple H's music back around because he's going into every corner, just soaking up all this love.
Yeah, because I suppose it's one of those where him himself going out, he's got no idea what the reaction is going to be. You know, there's been times where we've seen it where you're expecting this big reaction and it's just fallen on this absolute desert of emotion. So I guess he was so buzzed with the reaction, he's just like, right, I'm going to every single fucking turnbuckle here.
Oh, this is like a once-in-a-lifetime thing, really. Because like you say, you can sort of manufacture this a bit, and they've obviously been pinning a lot of hopes on Triple H being the big babyface of the season.
Yeah.
But I think it's really smart that they brought him out here, they're in the garden, it's, you know, a true wrestling crowd, and they appreciate what Triple H had to go through to get back and sound very excited for the future.
Yeah.
Crowd still cheer for him even when he grabs the mic, but eventually he gets out his opening statement. Just in case you've forgotten, let me tell you just who the hell I am. I am the Game!
And another fucking huge pop. And that was just me at home.
Oh, yeah. He's back and he enters the Royal Rumble. This brings out Kurt Angle and fans chant, "You suck" at him. See, this wasn't Edge's fault. Kurt points out a torn quad put Triple H out of action for 8 months, while Kurt won a gold medal with a broken freaking neck. Nice little corner piece in the Kurt Angle bingo for people there playing at home. Hunter's out here on Kurt's time, because it's time for Kurt's major announcement. Funnily enough, he is also entering the Royal Rumble, and it's his first Royal Rumble. Kurt then reminds everyone that he didn't enter the match last year because he was too busy beating Triple H for the championship. Could go back to episode 42 of our show for that. That causes Triple H to spear Kurt down and stomp a mud hole. Kurt fought back with a German suplex, but then Triple H chokes him out when Kurt charged at him and gets the pedigree to put Kurt out. JR closes the show screaming about all the main eventers that are now in the Royal Rumble as Triple H goes back up the ramp to celebrate with the fans in the cheap seats and pose to close the show.
So good.
That's about all you can ask for from that, really.
Oh, absolutely. I think you got absolutely everything with that. And I think that's what, like I was saying about this show, it's really sad that that's actually the best bit about the show and it wasn't even a match.
It's funny how that happens sometimes, but really, like, in terms of carrying things forward, you had just a genuine moment where people could connect with someone. You had a feud all set up for him. And, yeah, like, Kurt even calling back to, oh, well, I was the champion last year and I beat you, just goes to show you how much has changed. Like, it's not just their face and heel dynamic that's changed, but think about how much has happened in Triple H's absence. It makes you think, okay, so there's going to be some new stuff for Triple H too.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's about as good of a talking main event segment as you can get, really. It just did its job. Obvious highlight of the show, but overall, I mean, not for nothing, Kyle, I kind of enjoyed this a lot more than the previous episode we covered.
Yeah, I think the Raws and the SmackDowns that we're getting in the middle at the moment, I'm finding that we're only getting maybe the odd little snippet of a good thing. But I know that it'll start to pick up as we move forward.
Mm. There's some weirdness coming in, like the tag championship situation. That just feels really, really random and kind of below the standard that they've had previously. Jericho is a bit of a non-entity. It's a lot of authority figure focus again, which I'm not that big of a fan of. But like the opening going, the people who are like early on in the card, didn't get much time, they really tried to maximise the time they had out of it and did the best they can in the situations. And I think it made for some solid TV wrestling for the time they got given.
Yeah.
I don't think it's really worth having a match of the night, because really, this is a Triple H show, and that closing Triple H segment is what this show all revolves around.
Absolutely, yeah.
So he's a clear standout performer, if you like. Well, we won't have long to wait to see where this goes in the future, because our next episode will be the next week's Raw from January the 14th. So we'll see how Triple H is settling in with that show. We'll see how all the different championship matches are going to build up as we head towards the Royal Rumble. In the meantime, you can follow us on Twitter at TNW Podcast. Follow us on Instagram at TNW_podcast. Give us a like on Facebook, or follow us on Blue Sky Social. Just search for us, you'll find us. And that way you'll be able to keep up with all of our news when our next episodes are coming, and just have a natter with us. Give us a subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or SoundCloud. You can head to our SoundCloud page for a playlist of all of our past episodes, as well as my guest appearances on the Raw's Nitro podcast. We'll see you soon. It's a goodbye from Kyle.
Thank you for listening. I'll see you next time.
It's a goodbye from me. I'll catch you down the road.